As they rode away from the Half Moon, Sam glanced at his brother.
You believe her.
If Terry Kelly told me that the sun was shining, I'd reach for my rain slicker. I don't think she's capable of telling the truth.
If it was anybody else, you'd probably be willing to believe that they might have changed.
Yeah, but it's not somebody else. It's Terry.
Morton believes her.
Morton would believe anything a pretty woman told him. And I've never denied that Terry's mighty pretty until you get to know her. She's probably back there right now telling them how we twisted everything around and how she was just some poor, innocent gal who got taken advantage of by big, bad men. She might even squeeze out a tear or two to make it all more convincing.
I wouldn't be surprised if you're right. So what do we do now? Can we just sit back and do nothing while Cole tries to grab our ranch?
It's not our fight. Anyway, we've got enough to worry about trying to protect Charity and Lydia and those other gals from Cole. He wants to run them out of business, just like he wants to stampede Terry and take over the Half Moon.
Cole's fighting a war on two fronts, and he's had losses on both of them. He's going to have to regroup. But when he has...
He'll come after Charity again. Count on it.
Anna Malone was sitting at a table in the Colorado Palace, dealing a hand of solitaire, when Lucas Tate came into the saloon with an angry scowl on his face. He spotted her and stalked over to the table.
Where's Cole?
It's good to see you too, Lucas.
Damn it, Anna, I'm in no mood for games.
Oh, sit down and settle down. Junius is in his office going over the books. I'm fairly sure he doesn't want to be disturbed. Whatever you have to tell him, it can wait.
Who made you the boss around here?
He reeked of surliness, but he pulled out a chair and sat down as she had told him to.
Good lad. I know you rode out to ambush Bodine and two wolves before they could reach the Kincaid Woman's Ranch. I take it your mission didn't succeed as well as you hoped it would.
It didn't succeed at all. Those lucky bastards got away.
Anna doubted that luck had much to do with it. Tate was swift and deadly with a handgun, no doubt about that. But he was only an average shot with a rifle. Like most men, though, he believed that he was much better than he really was. She wasn't surprised to hear that Bodine and Two Wolves had escaped from his ambush. If Junius really wanted those two troublemakers taken care of, he would do well to assign the task to her. After all, she had gotten rid of Archibald Mackenzie for him, hadn't she? It had been child's play for her to get a job in the Silver Bell when the old Scotsman was still alive and running the place. She had just arrived in Buffalo Flat in response to Cole's summons, and no one in the settlement knew there was any connection between them, had no idea that they had worked together in other places, on other schemes. Once Mackenzie was smitten with her, poisoning him slowly was easy. Tate signaled for the bartender to send over a bottle. He turned back to Anna and leaned close.
Say, when are the two of us gonna get together again?
Oh, that's dangerous, Lucas. You know that. Junius wouldn't be happy if he found out about those other times.
Cole pays me to keep him alive and do some of his dirty work for him. He doesn't pay me to keep him happy.
Just be patient. The more successful his business endeavors are, the less attention he pays to me. Once he's taken over the entire town, he may be content to let me go. And then you and I can be together all the time.
She continued playing solitaire while Tate put away several drinks from the bottle of whiskey one of the bar girls brought over to the table. It wasn't long before Cole came out of his office, finished with his bookkeeping chores. He spotted Tate sitting at the table with Anna and came over to join them. He pulled out a chair and sat down, his eyes intent on Tate.
Well, did you take care of that problem like you said you would, Tate?
I had some bad luck. Bodine and Two Wolves got away.
Were either of them even wounded?
Tate shook his head and lifted the glass to his lips. Cole leaned forward and slapped it aside.
You stupid son of a bitch. You can't even handle a simple job like bushwhacking a couple of meddlesome bastards.
How many of your men have gone up against them the past few days? At least I'm still alive and can try again. That's more than most of those others can say. Anyway, I'd rather face Bodine man to man so I can prove that I'm faster than he is.
I don't pay you good money to inflate your reputation. I pay you to take care of problems for me. And right now, you're not earning your wages.
I will. You can count on that.
I'd better be able to. Bodine and two wolves will blame that ambush on me.
And they'll be right, of course.
I think it's time to lay low for a while and let things settle down again.
You're not going to do anything about those whores over at the Silver Bell?
All in good time. I'm going to leave the Kincaid woman alone, too. Let everybody think that there's not going to be any more trouble. That'll give me a chance to send for some more guns. When the time is right, we'll strike so hard that none of them will know what hit them. Not the whores, not Mrs. Kincaid, and not Bodine and Two Wolves. One big cleanup, and I'll be well on my way to being the most important man in this part of the state. Hell, in the whole state.
Tate nodded, but Anna could see the anger and resentment still smoldering in his eyes. The gunman wouldn't forget the way Cole had spoken to him, or getting that glass slapped out of his hand. Even though he would play along with Cole for now in hopes of a bigger payoff in the end, those insults would rankle and fester inside him and grow into an implacable hatred. A hatred that someday she would put to good use. As Cole had said, when the time was right. 3 days later, as Matt and Sam sat at one of the tables in the Silver Bell playing a lay game of poker for penny ante stakes, Charity came over and joined them. As they started to stand up politely, she waved them back into their chairs and took a seat herself.
No need to get formal on my account.
My ma wouldn't take it kindly if we weren't polite to a lady. She sort of raised us both after Sam's ma passed on.
And she insisted on good manners.
What a couple of rugged frontiersmen you two are. If you're that worried about proper etiquette, why don't you stick your pinky finger out when you drink your coffee?
Don't think we can't. Why, I've seen Sam there dressed up so fancy and talking so cultured-like, you'd think he was a gosh darn Englishman.
There's nothing wrong with a little civility, you ruffian.
No, you hear that? He called me a ruffian. I reckon I'm mortally offended. If I had me a white glove, I'd slap him across the face with it and challenge him to a duel. Maybe one of those fancy sword fights.
You don't know the first thing about fencing. I, on the other hand, became an expert with the foil while I was a student at the university.
Will you two just stop it? I swear the way you go on at each other, a person would think you're enemies instead of brothers. Anyway, the reason I came over here is to ask you what you think Cole is up to.
Doesn't appear that he's up to anything. He's just sitting over there in his saloon, not giving anybody a lick of trouble these days.
I know, and that's got me worried.
You think he's planning something even worse than before?
Well, what else could it be? He hasn't given up on getting rid of me and the girls, I'm sure of that.
I agree with that assessment. You know, Matt, we haven't actually introduced ourselves to Cole yet. Maybe we should go down to the Colorado Palace and do just that.
You mean walk right in?
Beard the lion in his den, so to speak. That might even give us a better idea of what Cole is planning. If he gets angry enough, he might let something slip.
Matt grinned and tossed his cards onto the table.
Let's go. It's about time we did something besides sit around.
Wait a minute. I didn't come over here and bring up the subject of Cole with the idea of you fellas going down there and doing something foolhardy.
There's nothing foolhardy about it. Consider it a scouting mission. We're trying to gauge the enemy's strength and intentions.
You're liable to get in a shootout with Cole's gunslingers.
I'm not sure he has any hired gunmen left other than Lucas Tate. He has some bartenders and bouncers and such, but I'd be willing to bet they're not that handy with their guns.
Well, if you're bound and determined to do this, at least be careful.
We always are.
Considering all the stories I've heard about you two, I'm not likely to believe that.
Once they were out on the street, the brothers grinned at each other and strolled toward the Colorado Palace.
You know, this is a little like poking a hornet's nest with a stick.
Yeah, and that was always one of my favorite things to do when I was a kid.
I remember. I also remember you got stung more than once.
Matt lightly touched the butts of his guns and winked at Sam.
I got stingers of my own now.
Sam rolled his eyes and shook his head. They crossed the street and stepped up onto the boardwalk and entered the Colorado Palace. Even though it was only early afternoon, the place was doing good business. Over the past 3 days, the Silverbell had been busy too, although the novelty of having a new saloon in town was wearing off, and some of the customers weren't returning as often. It was crazy for Junius Cole to be so worried about competition that he would resort to gunplay. There were enough people in Buffalo Flat and the surrounding area to support both saloons. The bar was crowded, and most of the tables in the place were occupied. Judge Ashmore had pointed out Cole to Matt and Sam one day on the street, so they knew what the man looked like. As their eyes searched quickly over the big room, they didn't see him, which meant he was probably in his office or upstairs. Lucas Tate was lounging at the far end of the bar, though. He stiffened and then straightened sharply as he spotted Bodine and Two Wolves. Matt could tell that the gunslinger was surprised they had ventured in here. Surprised, but not displeased. In fact, an ugly smile tugged at Tate's mouth. He stepped away from the bar, and some of the customers who were in a potential line of fire began sliding away.
Bodine, Two Wolves, what are you doing here?
Matt's thumbs were hooked casually in his gun belt. He shrugged, a half-smile on his face.
Can't a man step into a saloon for a cool beer on a hot afternoon?
Sure. In fact, the first round's on me.
That's mighty generous of you. Much obliged.
Believe me, the pleasure's all mine. Bartender, beer for these two gentlemen.
Tate strolled along the bar toward them. Matt kept his eyes on the man, watching for any telltale sign that Tate was about to hook and draw. He came to a stop only a few feet away.
We haven't been introduced. I'm Lucas Tate.
We know who you are, and it's obvious you know who we are.
Bodine and Two Wolves. A couple of big men with big reputations. I have to wonder if they're deserved. Those reps, I mean.
Using his left hand, Matt picked up one of the full mugs of beer the bartender placed on the hardwood. He took a sip, staring calmly at Tate over the rim of his glass.
Good beer. Anyway, it's up to other folks to decide about things like that. I never cared all that much about a reputation.
Easy to say when you've won every gunfight you've been in. Until now.
We didn't come in here looking for trouble, Tate.
Then why did you come?
Like I said, hot afternoon, cool beer. Reckon I ought to draw you a picture, Tate?
Tate's sneer turned into an angry snarl. Matt knew that the man was spoiling for a fight.
What's going on out here?
Junius Cole emerged from a door at the end of the bar and stalked toward the three men, confronting each other.
Tate, what's the trouble here?
No trouble, boss. Just a couple of saddle tramps getting proddy.
You're the one acting like he wants to start the ball, mister.
All three of you take it easy, damn it. I don't want any shooting in here. Bloodstains are hell to get off the floor. Now why don't you boys go back to the Silver Bell, since that's where you obviously belong?
Maybe we're thinking about switching sides.
Sure, that pig shit gold bricks.
Shut up, Tate. If you're serious about that, Two Wolves, maybe we should have a talk.
What the hell?
I don't think so, Cole. There's not enough money in the world to get us to work for a skunk like you.
If Cole was offended, he didn't show it. He was smiling, even.
You come in a man's place and drink his beer and then insult him? That's no way to be.
Sorry. Just telling the truth.
Well, maybe you and your half-breed friend should move on.
If you plan on making us do that, you'd better have somebody better than Tate here to back your play.
I think I'm gonna have all the help I need to do whatever I want.
Uh-oh. Now what?
Matt turned toward the entrance as a couple of men pushed through the bat wings and came into the saloon. They were followed by two more, then two more, and so on, until fully a dozen men had entered the Colorado Palace. All of them were covered with dust from the trail. They were lean, hard-faced hombres, some clean-shaven, while others sported mustaches or beards. A couple were dressed in suits and vests, while the rest wore typical range clothes, except for one gray-bearded gent in buckskins and a coonskin cap who looked more like an old-time mountain man than a range rider. All 12 of them were gun-hung, and it was clear they knew how to use those irons. They were a wolf pack, a crew of hired killers. One of the men ambled toward the bar. He was a little shorter than the others, wearing a black Stetson and a cowhide vest. His face was dark and pocked with old scars. When he stopped, he swept the bar with his dark gaze.
We're looking for Junius Cole.
I'm Cole.
I'm Porter Wood. That's Lige Braddock, Norm Haney, Flint McGee, Warren Jones, Bart Hill, Ed Guidry, Ben Martin, Chuck Forrest, Jim Ketchum, and Thad Wilbur. And the old-timer's Zach Davis.
I know who you are. I'm the one who sent for you, after all.
Well, that's where we've run into a little problem.
Problem? What sort of problem?
We're not going to be working for you after all.
Cole's puzzled frown gave way to shock.
But I'm the one who asked you to come to Buffalo Flat. We had an agreement.
Sorry, something else came up.
Then what are you doing here? Why come all this way to tell me that you're not going to be working for me after all?
A thin, humorless smile appeared on Wood's pockmarked face.
We thought maybe you could tell us how to find the Half Moon Ranch.
Sounds like you got outbid, Cole.
Cole looked like he couldn't believe what he had just heard. He glared furiously at the gunslingers.
You're gonna ride for that Kincaid woman?
That's the idea.
We had an agreement, damn it!
Cole looked like he wanted to take a swing at Wood, but he suppressed the impulse.
Actually, we didn't. We agreed to come here and talk to you, that's all. You never said for sure we'd take your offer.
Want me to teach this hombre a lesson, boss?
Tate stood there next to Cole in an apparently casual pose, but Matt could tell that he was anything but casual. The gunfighter had already been keyed up because of the way Matt and Sam had invaded Cole's domain. It seemed like he wanted to prove something to Cole and was willing to draw on anybody to do it. Porter Wood tensed slightly at Tate's words. So did the men who came with him.
This is my affair, boys. All of you stay out of it.
Damn it, there's no need for gunplay. Tate, back off.
But boss,
you heard me, back off. Listen, Wood, whatever she's paying you, I'll better the offer.
Sorry, not interested.
Cole looked past him at the other gunslingers.
What about the rest of you? Aren't you interested in making more money? I'll pay top dollar.
We ride together, mister. What Porter says goes.
Wood smiled that thin smile again.
We came by to talk to you first out of professional courtesy, I reckon you could say. Wanted to let you know what the situation was. But now we've got to be riding. And never mind the directions to the Half Moon. We know where it is.
Not surprised that Terry would send for gents like you.
Wood's cold eyes swung over to Matt and looked him over.
Who are you? Another Cole's man?
Hardly. Name's Matt Bodine.
Matt hooked his thumbs in his gun belt and inclined his head toward his blood brother.
This is Sam Two Wolves.
Several of the gunslingers stood up straighter and looked interested, including Porter Wood.
Bodine and the half-breed, eh? I've heard of you two. They say you're fast, especially you, Bodine.
They say a lot of things. The proof's in the doing.
Wouldn't mind seeing for myself someday.
Anytime, mister. Anytime you like.
Not today. We've got other things on our plate right now.
Wood lifted a finger to the brim of his hat.
Another time.
Matt and Sam nodded back. Cole just stared with incomprehension.
I'll double whatever she's paying you.
Wood ignored the man. He turned to the other gunman and jerked his head at the door.
Let's go.
The dangerous men filed out of the saloon. When the gunslingers were gone, Matt smiled at the shell-shocked Cole.
I reckon Sam and me will mosey on, too. You've had enough trouble for one day.
You and me got unfinished business, Bodine.
That's fine. There's enough for me to go around.
He and Sam walked to the bat wings, pushed through them, and stepped out onto the boardwalk. Matt and Sam headed back toward the Silver Bell.
Well, that was an interesting development. I wonder how Terry got enough money to hire Wood and his bunch.
I don't know. But she just changed the balance of power around here. I've heard of quite a few of those boys, including Wood. They're supposed to be pretty fast.
I'm just wondering.
Wondering what?
Maybe Terry's got her sights set a little higher than just hanging on to that ranch. Maybe with that many fast guns on her side, she's thinking about taking over from Cole. We could be talking about open warfare here.
Yeah, and if that happens, Charity, her friends, and the rest of the folks here in Buffalo Flat are shit out of luck.
For the past 3 days, things had been quiet on the Half Moon. Almost quiet enough so that Bo was worried a gun storm of some sort was building. He and Scratch had ridden all over the ranch by now, committing the spread to memory. They had turned back Half Moon stock trying to wander onto Diamond Sea Range. They had pulled cows and calves out of mud holes in the creek. They had straightened and tightened up the corral fences and patched holes in the barn roof. With 5 experienced hands on the place now, they were all rapidly whipping everything into shape. And it felt good, too. There was nothing like a day of hard but honest labor to make a man feel worth his salt. Bo and Scratch rode a couple of miles north of the ranch headquarters after hazing some strayed steers away from the boundary line between the Half Moon and the Diamond Sea.
It's too damn quiet, Scratch.
I swear, I never saw anybody as eager to hunt for a ruckus as you, Bo. Folks think I'm the only one who's always on the prod because you look so much like a goddamn parson, but you're the one who gets restless if you don't smell gun smoke for a few days.
I just got a feeling that something's going on. You saw Cole's riders a while ago when we were moving those cows back over here. They were in easy rifle range of us. Mrs. Kincaid and Hardy both warned us that Cole's men like to take pot shots at anybody who comes close to the line. Why didn't they make a try for us?
I don't believe it. You're complaining because you didn't get shot at.
Nah, that's not it. The only thing I can figure out is that Cole ordered his men not to shoot at folks on the other side of the line. Why is he changing his strategy now?
Maybe he finally figured out that he ain't gonna be able to run Miss Teresa off. Maybe he gave up.
Maybe he's planning something even worse than he's done before.
Oh, you're the most damn pessimistic son of a bitch I ever did see. I swear, if you'd been on the ark with Noah, you'd have been worrying that it was going to stop raining too soon and cause a drought.
Bo sat up straighter in the saddle and gazed off into the distance.
What's that?
What's what? What are you... Oh, hell. That's a lot of dust boiling up over yonder.
And it's heading for the ranch house. Let's go.
Bo leaned forward and dug his heels into the horse's flanks, sending the animal leaping forward in a gallop. As they raced toward the Half Moon Ranch proper, Bo wondered if Cole was launching an all-out attack on the spread. From the looks of the dust cloud rising into the sky, a large group of riders was bearing down on the ranch house. He listened for the crackle of gunfire, even though at this distance he might not be able to hear it over the pounding hoofbeats of his and Scratch's mounts. As they drew closer, though, he still didn't hear any shots. And when they reached the top of the hill where the little cemetery was located, they could look down at the ranch headquarters and see that everything appeared peaceful. Something unusual was definitely going on, though. At least a dozen horses were tied up at the bunkhouse. Bo and Scratch couldn't see what was happening at the front of the house. They rode quickly down the hill and circled the sprawling log building. Bo and Scratch reined in as they came in sight of the long porch on the front of the house. The men who had ridden in on those horses were gathered there, and Teresa was talking to them, apparently calmly. She didn't appear to be frightened or upset at all. In fact, there was a pleased smile on her face, as if things were finally going her way at last. Several of the men had swung around at the sound of the horses. Bo didn't like the looks of them. He knew hard cases when he saw them, and these men sure as hell fit the description. One of them, an older man in buckskins and a coonskin cap, glared at the Texans as if he knew them.
Son of a bitch, is that old Mike Davis?
Morton, I knew I'd run into you again sooner or later.
With that, he launched himself off the porch in a diving tackle that drove Scratch right out of the saddle. Bo backed his horse away and grabbed the reins of Scratch's mount as it spooked. He hauled the horse away from the men, who had fallen to the ground and started grappling there. The way they were trying to choke each other and gouge each other's eyes out, they appeared likely to do enough damage to themselves without getting stepped on by a horse.
Son of a bitch!
Teresa stepped to the edge of the porch, looking startled by the fracas that had broken out with no warning. At her side was one of the strangers, a short, wiry man with a pockmarked face.
Well, what's this all about?
Just an old grudge. Just let them work it out amongst themselves.
Sounds good to me. I wouldn't want to try and get between those two old wildcats.
Bo, can't you stop this?
Reckon I'd better before they actually hurt each other.
The shot from Bo's Colt made the two combatants halt just as they started to advance on each other.
Rein it in, Ike, you old curly wolf.
But Porter, this here's the fella who stole that little Mexgal from me down in Santa Fe a few years back.
Like hell I did. You stole her from me. Broke her heart when you ran out on her, too.
I remember that. And as I recall, the lady in question was an old lady. Chances are her heart wasn't broken. I doubt she even remembered either one of you by the next day.
Scratch started slapping dust off his clothes and shot a plaintive look at his partner.
Oh, hell, Bo, that ain't any kind of way to talk. Ain't you got a romantic bone in your whole body?
Yeah, Creel, you're just jealous because Rosita didn't want nothing to do with you.
You think whatever you want to, Ike. It's good to see you anyway.
Bo leaned over and extended his hand. Ike hesitated, but then reached up and gripped Bo's hand. Then he turned to Scratch.
Well, put her there, Morton.
Hell, why not?
Ike and Scratch shook hands, grinning at each other.
Let me get this straight. You two weren't actually trying to kill each other.
Scratch picked up his hat, knocked it back into shape, and put it on.
No, that's just our way of saying howdy, I reckon. Although I am still might peeved at this ugly old badger.
Ugly old badger, is it? You're uglier and older than I am, Methuselah.
Still holding the reins of Scratch's horse, Bo swung down from the saddle.
I know Ack, Miss Teresa, but who's the rest of the company?
Teresa took hold of the arm of the man standing next to her.
This is a friend of mine, Porter Wood, and these other men are friends and associates of his. They've come to give us a hand.
Bo kept a friendly smile on his face, but inside he tensed with wariness. He recognized Porter Wood's name. The man was a gunslinger. More than that, he was a hired gun, and judging by their looks, the rest of the men with him might well be cut from the same cloth. A few days earlier, Teresa had said something about having sent for some help. At the time, Bo had figured she'd meant some more cowhands to help run the ranch. He hadn't expected a small army of gun throwers to arrive instead. It made sense, though. To deal with the threat she was facing from Junius Cole, Teresa needed men who were handy with their guns, not a rope and a branding iron. Probably the only ropes these men had any experience with were the hang ropes they had dodged, and any branding they had ever done had been with a rustler's running iron. Those thoughts went through Bo's head as he gave Wood and the other men a polite nod.
Pleased to meet you, boys.
That was a lie. Bo wasn't pleased by this development at all. At the moment, however, there wasn't anything Bo could do about it.
If you're signing on to ride for the Half Moon, I reckon you'll want to head on over to the bunkhouse and settle in. Might be a little crowded, but there ought to be room for all of you.
Porter will be staying here in the ranch house.
Scratch looked a little crestfallen, but Bo just nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
Teresa's personal life was none of his business, and she had been widowed for a while. It seemed like a waste for a gal as young and pretty as her to take up with a gunslinging snake like Porter would, but there was no accounting for taste.
Come on, Ike. I'll introduce you to the other fellows who work here.
Bo brought the horses along as he fell in step beside Scratch and Ike.
How'd you come to be riding with Wood and the rest of that bunch, Ike?
What do you mean by that, Creel? You think I ain't good enough to be riding with him?
That's not what I mean at all. Wood's a hired killer, and those other hombres look like the same sort. You've been mixed up in some shady deals in the past, but in the old days, you never sold your gun to the highest bidder.
That's right, Ike. Even though I'd never trust you around a gal I liked, you'd always do to ride the river with the rest of the time.
I ain't crossed trails with you two in quite a while. Things changed, damn it. I ain't as young as I used to be. It's getting harder to find the kind of work that a fellow like me can do. How the hell am I supposed to make a living? Can you honestly see me clerking in a dry goods store or toting bags at a railroad depot? I've been riding with Porter for a while. The pay's good. The work's always exciting.
Getting shot at, you mean?
I'd rather go out with a gun in my hand instead of a damn broom.
Both Bo and Scratch understood what Ike meant. The thought of fading away and finally dying in some lonely rented room held no appeal for them either. It might have been different if they'd had families, if they could have looked forward to crossing over the divide with a passel of kids and grandkids and great-grandkids around to send them on their way. But as it was, maybe Ike was right. He didn't trust Porter Wood, and he was beginning to trust Teresa less and less. As the men approached the bunkhouse, Mort pushed himself away from the front and walked over to Bo. He darted a look at Ike, then raised eyebrows at Bo before taking the reins and leading the horses away to the barn.
That fella's not too friendly.
Mort's just quiet. Here, come on in. Let's get you a bunk.
Hector Abinez was the only one of the regular hands in the bunkhouse. They introduced Ike to the genial Mexican. The other men came into the bunkhouse and began claiming bunks. There were enough beds to go around with a few to spare, but one of the gunslingers went over to Hector's bunk, picked up the guitar laying there, and tossed it aside so that he could dump his war bag down in its place.
Senor, my apologies, but that is my place.
Not anymore, Greaser.
Hector picked up his guitar and checked it for damage. Finding none, he set it carefully on Bo's bunk for the moment, and then turned back to the man who had dispossessed him.
I must insist.
Blow it out your Mexican ass. Now get away from me before I make you sorry you ever left the land of the chili peppers. Comprende?
Take it easy, Kidry. Ain't no reason for you to be picking on this fella.
There's the best reason in the world. I don't like greasers. And if you got a problem with that old man, that's just too damn bad.
Gidry was young, probably no more than 24 or 25. A young, sleek, dangerous gun wolf. But Ike Davis had been surviving on the frontier for more years than Gidry had been alive. Ike scowled at him. The gunslinger stepped closer to him.
You got a problem, old man?
Ike's right hand came up with blinding speed, and the sunlight that spilled through the open doorway of the bunkhouse glinted off the broad blade of the bowie knife he held. The razor-sharp tip dug into the flesh just under Gidry's chin.
Would you rather me open you up from gizzard to gullet, you little piece of shit? Or should I just cut your throat and get it over with quick-like? 'Cause I got a problem, all right. And it's gonna be too damn bad for you.
Gidry's eyes bugged out in fear and surprise.
Take it easy, old-timer. I didn't mean nothing by it. Just put the knife down, all right?
His wide eyes rolled toward Bo and Scratch.
You two know him. Can't you talk some sense into his head?
Problem there is that Hector's our amigo, too.
And we can't abide folks treating our friends rudely.
All right! I'm sorry! Is that what you want me to say? The greaser can have his bunk back! I don't care!
Apologize like a man, you worthless shit.
Look, mister, I'm sorry.
Gidry very carefully turned his head to look at Hector. A little trail of blood trickled down his throat from the spot where the knife rested.
De nada. You must remember, though, to treat a man's guitar with respect.
Sure thing.
A shadow crossed the bunkhouse door, and Porter Wood glared at everyone.
What in blazes is going on here?
Just getting a few things straight with young Gidry here. He hadn't figured out that an old wolf is generally the most dangerous varmint of all. Reckon he knows it now, though.
Ike wiped the tip of the blade on his buckskin trousers and then sheathed the bowie.
Damn it, Ike, don't get your back up so easy. We've got a job to do here, and I can't afford you boys start killing each other. We've got more important things to take care of.
Like what?
Excuse me? Creel, isn't it?
That's right. And I asked just what those important things are that you have to take care of.
I reckon you know that already, Creel. We're going to make sure that Junius Cole never bothers Mrs. Kincaid again.
And how are you going to do that?
However I have to.
Bo and Scratch exchanged a glance. War was coming to Buffalo Flat. Junius Cole had heard the old saying about being stuck between a rock and a hard place, but he had never really understood it until now. The rough crew he had hired to run the Diamond Sea were still out there on the ranch, but most of the gunnies he'd had working for him here in Buffalo Flat had been killed off or seriously wounded by that damn Bodine and Two Wolves. Several of the others who hadn't been injured had drawn their wages and deserted him, riding away from the settlement rather than staying and running the risk of facing a gunfight with the two dangerous young men. The only fast gun Cole could still count on here in town was Lucas Tate. Tate might be fast enough to take either Bodine or Two Wolves, but not both of them. Even facing them one at a time, the odds would still be against him. That meant Cole had to leave those whores at the Silver Bell alone for the time being, no matter how much their presence in Buffalo Flat grated at him. But after the betrayal by Porter Wood, he didn't really have a choice in the matter. It was time to turn his attention to the Half Moon. Teresa Kincaid was a threat, and she would continue to be as long as she controlled the spring that fed his creek. Cole was in his office at the Colorado Palace waiting for his ranch foreman, Roy Barlow, to answer his summons when Anna poked her head in the door.
Roy Barlow is here to see you, Junius.
Bring him in.
Anna nodded and whisked away as Cole shoved some papers aside on the desk. He opened one of the drawers and brought out a bottle and a couple of glasses. Anna led Barlow into the office a moment later. The burly foreman watched the sway of her hips appreciatively as he came into the room. Cole noticed, but didn't take offense. If he was going to get upset every time some hombre eyed Anna, then he wouldn't have time to do anything except be mad all the time. Anyway, he liked the idea that other men wanted her when he was the only one who could have her, unless he said otherwise.
Sit down and have a drink, Roy.
Don't mind if I do, boss.
Barlow sank into a chair in front of the desk. He was a big, barrel-chested man in his 40s, with thinning brown hair under a thumbed-back Stetson. He possessed exactly the qualities Cole needed in a ranch foreman. He was good at handling both livestock and men, he was a deadly fighter with a gun and knife and fist, and he could be utterly ruthless when he needed to be. Plus, he was wanted for murder in Arizona, a fact that Junius Cole happened to know. The knowledge was a useful lever in case Barlow ever got any big ideas, although that was unlikely to happen. As long as the money was good, Barlow was glad to do pretty much whatever Cole wanted. Cole was confident the foreman would have bushwhacked William Kincaid if Cole had asked him to, and if somebody hadn't already beaten them to the punch on that score. Cole poured the drinks and slid one of the glasses across the desk to Barlow. Anna left the room, and the man looked a little disappointed at her departure, but didn't say anything.
Here's mud in your eye. What can I do for you, boss?
You've been steering clear of the Half Moon for the past few days, like I told you?
Yeah. Yesterday, me and a couple of the boys had a good shot at those two old codgers who've gone to work for Ms. Kincaid. We didn't take it, just like you said.
That's good. But the situation is different now. All bets are off. Use your own best judgment, Roy.
You mean we're going after the Half Moon again?
That's right. Do whatever it takes to convince that stubborn woman it'd be in her best interests to sell me the ranch and get out of this part of the country.
Barlow grinned. If Cole took over the Half Moon, the combined spreads would be the largest and best ranch in the entire state. And even though Cole would be the owner, Barlow would be in charge of the day-to-day operations.
Don't you worry, boss. We'll have that gal convinced in no time at all.
There's just one thing. The Half Moon has some new hands riding for it now.
From the puzzled look on his face, Barlow hadn't heard about that development while he was out on the Diamond Sea.
Well, it don't matter. We can handle anything that woman throws at us. How many men are we talking about?
A dozen, and they're led by Porter Wood.
Wood? The gunfighter?
That's right.
And I reckon the men with him are the same breed of hombre?
I'm afraid so.
That put a new face on the situation, and Cole knew it. Barlow sat there for a long moment, glaring.
I've got 20 men, boss. But not all of them are gun handy enough to stand up to the likes of Porter Wood. I ain't sure that even half of them are.
When you took over the Diamond Sea for me, I told you to hire the saltiest cowboys you could find.
Yeah, and they're plenty salty, but they're still cowboys. They ain't professional gun slicks.
You have the advantage of numbers. Plus, you admit yourself that even the men who aren't professional gunmen are pretty tough. I think you can handle this problem, Roy. I have confidence in you.
Huh. Well, I appreciate that. Still, Porter Wood's got a heap of notches on his gun. If there's 10 or 11 more like him on the Half Moon crew, I just don't know, boss.
I leave it in your hands. As I told you, use your best judgment. But I want results, Roy. Make no mistake about that. If you can't get results...
I never said that. How about another drink?
Sure.
Cole poured it, and Barlow slugged it down.
Don't worry. Give me a chance, and it won't be long before that woman's gone from the Half Moon. Or dead.
Like I said, Roy, I'll leave that up to you.
After the confrontation between Ike Davis and Ed Guidry, things were quiet on the Half Moon that night and the next day. If Bo, Scratch, and the other ranch hands had counted on getting some help around the place from Porter Wood's crew, they would have been disappointed. The gunslingers didn't budge from their bunks until late the next morning, and even when they woke up, they didn't offer to help out. Instead, they sat around the bunkhouse playing cards, rolling quirlies, and nipping from flasks. Ike was the only one who rattled his hocks to do something useful, and Bo suspected that was only because Ike was an old friend of him and Scratch. Luckily, Bo and Scratch hadn't been expecting anything from the newcomers, except maybe the potential for more trouble. As they rode out onto the range the next day, Bo glanced at Scratch.
Starting to look like Bodine and Two Wolves had Mrs. Kincaid pegged pretty accurately.
Yeah. It don't look good her being so friendly with Wood and the rest of his bunch. They're skunks, most of them. Plum skunks. But you got to remember that old Ike's riding with them, too, so they ain't all bad.
Well, Ike was never what you call a choir boy. I recall several loads of guns that got smuggled across the Mexican border a while back. He had a hand in that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he robbed a bank or two in his time.
Well, hell, we robbed a bank or two in our time. Remember that time in Arroyo Rojo?
That was different. We had a good reason to rob that bank. Anyway, we gave the money back.
And what about that stagecoach we held up? And that fellow we kidnapped?
Bo took off his hat and sleeved sweat from his forehead.
It's not the same thing. We weren't breaking the law in those cases so much as we were trying to see that justice was done. I reckon you could say we just bent the law a little.
Well, still, it ain't all that much different. Ike probably figured he had a good reason every time he strayed across the line, too.
Yeah, like filling his own pockets with loot. That's why he's riding with Woods' bunch. He admitted that much himself yesterday, remember?
So what are you saying? That we ought to ride off and abandon Miss Teresa? Because I ain't one to cut and run, Bo, you know that. Once I start something, I finish it.
All I'm saying is that Mrs. Kincaid's hooked up with a bunch of hard cases again, just like Bodine and Two Wolves said she had before. Maybe, considering what she's up against in a varmint like Cole, what she's doing is justified. But we just have to think about it. That's all I'm saying.
I ride for the brand. That's all I'm saying.
A wry smile twisted Bo's mouth. Of course, it helped if that brand was owned by a pretty young woman. Just then, the Texans spotted a tendril of gray smoke curling into the sky ahead of them, a couple of hills away.
That looks like smoke from a Brandon fire.
The only Brandon going on right now is the running iron kind. Come on.
Bo heeled his horse into a trot. Scratch fell in alongside him. Both men reached down and made sure their Winchesters were loose in the saddle sheaths. They had just reached the top of the first hill when they saw another rider heading over the next rise. The Texans reined in.
Ain't that Mort?
He must have spotted the smoke just like we did and decided to investigate.
By himself? If there's a bunch of rustlers over there, he'll get his head shot off.
That's what I'm worried about. Yeah!
They galloped through the little grassy valley between hills and up the wooded slope. Mort Skaggs was out of sight by now, and they couldn't see the smoke from where they were either. But no shots had rung out yet, and the longer that condition lasted, the better. As they topped the rise, Bo hauled back on the reins and signaled for Scratch to halt too, so that they could get the lay of the land before charging into possible trouble. the trees along the ridge concealed them for the moment. Sure enough, a couple of cowboys had kindled a small fire at the bottom of the hill, and they had a running iron heating in it, while a hog-tied calf struggled on the ground nearby. The calf's mama stood several yards away, glaring belligerently at the rustlers. Mort Skaggs had almost reached the rustler's fire. He had drawn his gun and was riding openly toward them. The rustlers must have heard him approaching, but they didn't turn to face him. They acted like they didn't even know he was anywhere around.
Something's wrong. It's some sort of...
Hey, you bastards! What the hell do you think you're doing?
That was when the two men hit the dirt, and Bo felt sick horror twist his guts. There was no time for him to even shout a warning to Mort.
Them two rustlers were just bait!
The rustlers pushed themselves to their feet and grinned at what was left of Mort Skaggs. Bo knew Scratch was right. The smoke was just to draw in one or more of the half-moon hands so that the hidden riflemen could mow them down. Rage welled up inside Bo. He pulled his Winchester from its sheath and brought it to his shoulder. One of the rustlers fell hard, drilled cleanly and mortally, but the other one was only hit in the hip. He tried to crawl away. Scratch had unlimbered his rifle by that time, however, and drawn a bead. The wounded man slumped as Scratch put a bullet through his brain. Bo raised his sights for the trees where the bushwhackers were hidden and opened up on them. He and Scratch were in the cover of some trees too, but that didn't stop the hidden riflemen from putting up a fight. They returned the Texan's fire. Then, running low on ammunition, Bo and Scratch had to wheel their horses and light a shuck before the bushwhackers came after them.
I don't like leaving Mort there!
Neither do I. But maybe we can fetch some of the other boys and catch those bastards before they get off Half Moon Range.
They didn't run into anyone on their way back to the ranch headquarters. If Wood and his men had been out riding the range like they should have been, Mort might not have had to face the rustlers alone. Of course, that would have meant that even more men might have died in the trap. Bo and Scratch slid from their saddles and strode toward the bunkhouse.
Cole was behind this.
Yeah, I imagine you're right. He'd called a truce for a few days for some reason, but it's over now.
Ike came out of the bunkhouse, accompanied by Hardy Thomas. Hardy saw the way Bo and Scratch were hurrying and ran forward to meet them.
What is it? Thought I heard shots a little while ago.
You did. Mort tried to jump a couple of rustlers and got himself killed.
Mort? Dead?
That's not all of it. It was all a trap. Those bushwhackers made it look like they were going to rebrand one of the Half Moon cows. Mort tried to stop them, and he got shot down by half a dozen men that had been hiding in the trees.
Hardy turned toward the bunkhouse, but Ike was already moving in that direction.
I'll rouse the fellas. We'll ride out there and have a look.
Not everybody. Cole's men could be trying to draw us away from the ranch.
Teresa heard the commotion and came onto the porch of the ranch house. She waved Bo over to her, while the men spilled out of the bunkhouse and hastily saddled their horses.
What's happened?
Bushwhacker trap killed Mort, Mrs. Kincaid. Me and Scratch couldn't get there fast enough to do anything about it.
She looked genuinely saddened and angered by the news of Mort's death.
Cole again?
I reckon so.
You're riding back out there to get Mort's body?
Yeah, and to see if we can find out anything for sure about those bushwhackers. I know it's pretty much a lost cause, hoping for any help from Sheriff Branch, but it won't hurt anything to try.
If you capture any of the men responsible for Mort's death, don't shoot them.
What do you want us to do?
Hang them.
They didn't find anybody, not even the two so-called rustlers Bo and Scratch had killed. Bo wasn't surprised the bushwhackers had taken the dead men with them. They hadn't wanted to leave anybody behind who could be positively identified. The only body lying on the ground near the burned-out fire was that of Mort Skaggs, and it was so shot to pieces that it barely resembled anything human. The calf had been untied and left to run off after its mama. Bo would have bet that the bushwhackers hadn't even taken the time to brand it. Porter Wood and six of the other gunslingers had ridden out with Bo, Scratch, and Hardy. The other gunmen had remained back at the Half Moon headquarters, just in case the crew from the Diamond Sea tried a sneak attack there. Wood studied the tracks left by the bushwhackers.
We could follow them, but I don't really see any point in it.
No point in it? The bastards killed one of my friends. They killed a man who rides for the same brand you do. How can you not go after him?
I reckon Mr. Wood looks at things a mite different than we do, Hardy.
I don't believe in wasting time or energy. They did what they came over here to do. They murdered a Half Moon Rider. If they think that's gonna scare off the rest of us, they're sadly mistaken. Come on, boys. Let's get back to the ranch.
Hardy stared at the gunman, fuming. After a moment, his shoulders slumped as he looked at Beau and Scratch.
Help me get Mort over my saddle, will you? We gotta take him back to be laid to rest proper. Put him beside Johnny.
That's the least we can do for him now.
Hardy's horse tried to shy away from the smell of blood and the weight of the corpse as they lifted Mort's body onto the saddle. It was a gruesome task, but the men got it done fairly quickly. They used Hardy's lasso to tie Mort onto the horse. Then the foreman climbed up behind the saddle. Deep lines of sorrow and anger were etched into Hardy's weathered face as he took up the reins. The three men started to ride back toward the ranch headquarters with their grim burden, but they hadn't gotten far when the sound of shots suddenly came to their ears.
Blast it! Cole's men must have jumped the ranch headquarters just like I was afraid it would.
Come on, let's get in on the fight.
Scratch and I'll ride ahead and see what's going on. You bring Mort's body, but stay out of the fight.
Damn it, Bo, I'm the ramrod on this spread. I give the orders.
I know, but you're responsible for Mort's body. It's up to you to see that he receives a proper burial.
All right. But hurry up and ventilate some of those bastards for me.
Bo nodded. Then he and Scratch put their horses into a gallop as they headed for the ranch headquarters as swiftly as they could. Across valleys, over ridges, around outcroppings of rock, they raced toward the sounds of battle. When Bo and Scratch came within sight of the ranch house, they saw clouds of powder smoke hazing the air around the buildings. Bo reined in, and Scratch followed suit. They studied the layout intently.
Got men holed up in the bunkhouse in the main house. Riflemen across the creek in them trees and up on the hill behind the house, so they got the place in a crossfire.
Those buildings are plenty sturdy, though. It'd be hard for anybody to root out the defenders short of putting a place to the torch. And you know Wood and his men have to be pretty good shots. If they just rushed the buildings, Cole's bunch would have to pay a mighty high price just to get them.
So why do it? Why attack the place now?
The crew from the Diamond Sea, if that's who bushwhacked Mort, probably thought they could circle around and get here while our forces were still split. From the looks of it, though, I bet Wood and the others got back here just about the same time Cole's men did.
And once they'd opened the ball, they were too stubborn to back out. Yeah, I reckon you're right, Bo. Question is, what are we gonna do about it?
From here, we can reach both the hill behind the house and the trees across the creek. Let's give Cole's gunny something else to think about.
Bo drew his rifle from the saddle boot, and Scratch grinned as he pulled his Winchester.
I like the way you think, partner.
The Texans lifted their weapons. By unspoken agreement, Bo targeted the hillside, while Scratch peppered the trees on the other side of the creek with lead. The men from the Diamond Sea were already under fire from the defenders in the house and the bunkhouse. This new attack from a different direction must have been more than some of them could stand.
They're lighting a shuck!
Some of them, anyway.
Bo took a box of .44-40 cartridges from his saddlebags and started thumbing fresh rounds into the Winchester's loading gate.
God damn it, you're right, Bo. They ain't all running.
In fact, a group of horsemen burst from the trees along the creek and started toward Bo and Scratch, firing from their saddles as they came. Ignoring the bullets buzzing around him, Bo dismounted quickly, turned his horse around, and slapped the animal on the rump with his hat, sending it running away, hopefully out of the line of fire. Scratch did likewise. Then both of the drifters hunkered behind rocks and resumed the fight. They were under heavy fire now, from the riflemen hidden in the trees, as well as from the riders who were thundering toward them. Cool-headed, they kept their wits about them and took their time as they drew beads on the men charging them. Two of the riders jerked in their saddles. The men dropped their guns and sagged, but they managed to stay mounted as they veered their horses away. The other men stopped and furiously shot at Bo and Scratch for several long seconds, forcing the Texans to hug the dirt behind the rocks. Then Cole's men whirled their mounts and galloped off in the other direction. The hidden gunmen broke off their attack and got out of there while the getting was good. If Junius Cole had hoped that his men could drive them out, he was going to be disappointed when he found out what had happened. Scratch started to stand up, but Bo grabbed his arm.
Better stay down for a little while longer, just in case they left some sharpshooter behind.
Yeah, I reckon you're right.
Scratch suddenly swiveled his head and looked over his shoulder.
Somebody coming up behind us.
Bo rolled onto his back and drew his six gun, figuring the Colt would be more effective in a close-range fight. But a second later, he recognized the man riding toward them through the trees, as well as the limp, bloody shape carried across the horse's saddle.
Stay back, Hardy!
What happened?
Bo saw the little puff of dust from Hardy's shirt where the bullet had slammed into his chest. The foreman swayed in the saddle.
Hardy!
Nearby, Scratch blasted his rifle.
He got away, damn it! I just got a glimpse of him riding hell-bent for leather through them trees.
Bo was already on his feet, disregarding any further threat as he leaped toward Hardy's horse. He got there just in time to catch the foreman as Hardy toppled from the horse's back. Bo staggered but remained on his feet. Carefully, he lowered Hardy to the ground as gently as he could. Scratch ran over to join them and dropped to a knee on the other side of the wounded man. A jagged crimson stain spread quickly on the front of Hardy's shirt. He looked up at Bo and Scratch with lines of pain tugging at his face.
Looks like you'll be digging two graves now. Don't talk like that, Hardy. You're gonna be fine. Look at your partner's face. He knows the truth. And so do I. I'm done for. Bo, the ranch. Is the ranch all right?
Yeah. We got here in time to help drive off Cole's men.
Did you drill any of them?
We got a few of them. I don't know if anybody on our side was hit except for Morton.
And me. Damn it. Oh, it hurts. Oh, put me on the hill with Johnny and Mort. Oh, sure he's pretty there. Oh, the morning.
Oh. Hardy's head fell back and his eyes closed. Bo lowered Hardy's head to the ground.
Damn it. Damn it to hell.
Stay here with these poor fellas. I'll go fetch a wagon for both of them and see if everybody's all right at the house.
He straightened and walked over to catch his horse's reins. The animal bumped its velvety nose against his shoulder, but the grim look remained on Bo's face as he took up the reins, grasped the horn, and swung into the saddle. Scratch handed him his Winchester. Bo jammed the rifle into the boot and then rode toward the ranch house. Hector Abinez came running from the bunkhouse to meet him.
Señor Bo! Señor Bo! You are all right?
Bo nodded as he reined to a halt in front of the house.
Yeah, what about everybody here?
A crease or two in the bunkhouse. Nothing serious. I do not know about Miss Teresa and the others. Where are Hardy and Scratch?
Scratch is back over yonder in those trees. Hardy's there, too. He was hit. I'm afraid he's dead.
Dios mío. I am the only one left.
Bo knew what he meant. Hector was the last of the ranch hands who had been on the Half Moon before all the trouble began, before William Kincaid brought back a new and unexpected wife from Denver. Teresa hurried out onto the porch, followed by Porter Wood and a couple of Wood's gunslinging companions.
Did I hear you right, Bo? Hardy is dead?
I'm afraid so. What happened here?
They hit us just as the boys and I got back. We barely made it to the buildings in time. If they'd been a little faster getting here while the bunch of us were split up, they might have succeeded in wiping us all out. I reckon it was you and Morton who finally spooked them into running.
But not before one of them took a last shot that hit Hardy.
He knew the risks. You can't get in the middle of a war like this without taking a chance on getting hurt.
Well, this war isn't going to go on. It's crazy, and I'm going to put a stop to it.
Begging your pardon, ma'am, but how do you intend to go about doing that?
Get all the men together. As soon as all the little wounds are patched up, and As soon as we've buried Hardy and Mort, we're all going to town.
Now you're talking.
What do you intend to do there?
I am going to see Junius Cole, and I am going to put a stop to this madness once and for all.
Bo still wasn't sure he and Scratch were doing the right thing by accompanying Teresa Kincaid and her crew of hired gunnies to town. Teresa had insisted that everybody on the Half Moon come with her, though. Bo had brought up the possibility that if the spread was deserted, some of Cole's men might ride in and take over the buildings, or even set fire to them. He hoped that Teresa would decide to leave some of the hands at the ranch to protect it, and if that was the case, he intended to see to it that he and Scratch were among the contingent remaining on the Half Moon. If Teresa planned to force a showdown with Cole, Bo wanted no part of it, and he didn't want to see his old friend Scratch cut down by flying lead either. It was enough that Hardy Thomas and Mort Skaggs had already died today, for a cause in which Bo no longer fully believed. But Teresa had shaken her head and said flatly that everyone was going. As they rode out with Bo, Scratch, and Hector bringing up the rear behind the buckboard and the group of gunslingers, Bo cast a glance at the hillside where Hardy and Mort lay in their freshly dug graves next to Johnny Del Rio. That little burial ground was liable to get mighty crowded before this was over, he thought.
What do you think the Senora plans to do, Senor Bo?
From the way she talked, she intends to have a showdown with Cole. Maybe even ride in shooting.
Innocent folks will get hurt if we do that, sure enough.
I know, but I reckon Mrs. Kincaid has been pushed as far as she'll be pushed. Today's raid was the last straw.
You know, maybe a showdown ain't such a bad idea. Cole can't have too many men left in town, not after all the damage those young hellions, Bodine and Two Wolves, have done to his bunch. We might be able to wipe them out, and then that'd leave just the gunnies on the Diamond Sea. If Cole dead, chances are they'd give up the fight. Cut off the head of a rattler and the body dies, as the old saying goes.
I still don't like the idea very much.
I didn't like helping bury Hardy and Mort, neither. They wouldn't be dead if Cole wasn't such a greedy, high-handed bastard.
There is that.
The distance between the Half Moon and Buffalo Flat seemed to be covered quicker than usual today. The settlement soon came into view, with the church steeple being the first thing visible, as always. The buckboard being driven by a coldly impassive Teresa Kincaid rolled past the house of worship, followed by the 15 men on horseback. The large group of hard-faced, gun-hung riders attracted attention immediately, and good-sized crowds were forming on both sides of the street as they approached the Colorado Palace Saloon. Bo cast a glance toward the Silver Bell and wondered if Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves were in there. Sam and Matt sat at a table with Charity and Judge Ashmore when Casey McLennan, the editor of the local newspaper, came into the Silver Bell Saloon. He spotted them and started across the room toward them.
The representative of the press approaches. I wonder what he wants.
Ashmore nodded to the editor as McLennan came up to the table.
How are you, Casey? Sit down and join us.
Thanks, Judge.
McLennan pulled back one of the empty chairs and sat down. He nodded politely to Charity.
Miss McKenzie?
Hello, Mr. McLennan. Did you decide that the grand reopening of the Silver Bell was worth a story in your paper after all?
As a matter of fact, I did. This establishment has been open for a while now and proving to be quite popular. So I convinced my wife we ought to at least mention that fact in our columns.
I see. You mean it's newsworthy that Cole's hired killers didn't murder me and my friends and shut down our saloon right away?
Matt saw a flash of anger in McLennan's eyes, but the newspaperman kept his temper under control.
I don't like Junius Cole much more than you do, Miss McKenzie. It's no secret that he has political ambitions. I can't think of much worse for the state than to have a man like Cole as governor or senator.
You don't really think that people would elect a saloon keeper of questionable character like Cole to such an office, do you?
Hey, I'm a saloon keeper.
You're not running for office. And anyway, your character is above reproach compared to a man like Cole.
You do realize I used to be a whore, don't you?
I'd vote for a good honest whore over some of the chicken thieves who've held office in this country.
Amen, my young friend.
Judge Ashmore had been spending more and more time in the Silver Bell recently. If he had ever been under the thumb of Junius Cole, he seemed to have wiggled out from that position.
Anyway, I'd like to put something in the paper about you and your friends and the way you've taken over running this place. I'll have to be a little circumspect, of course.
And not say anything about us being a bunch of former prostitutes, even though everybody in town already knows about it.
I promise you, I mean no offense, Miss McKenzie. Mr. Bodine, Mr. Two Wolves, I'd also like to interview the two of you.
Not a chance, mister. Sam and I have enough people gunning for us without getting our reputations inflated even more by a bunch of highfalutin' words in some newspaper.
Do you honestly think that people don't already know who you are? It didn't take long for the word to spread around town that Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves were in Buffalo Flat. You're famous, whether you like it or not.
Never set out to be famous.
We just want to be left alone to live our lives.
Then you shouldn't have been born so fast on the draw.
I'm afraid he has you there, boys. Once you have a reputation as a fast gun, there's only one way to get over it.
And that's to meet someone faster? We know, Judge.
Boy, howdy do we know.
What about it, Miss McKenzie? Will you go along with me doing a story about you and your friends in the Silver Bell?
Charity had wanted that all along, Matt knew, so he wasn't surprised when she nodded. She just hadn't wanted to agree with a newspaperman without first pricking a few little holes in the pomposity that went along with his profession.
I think that would be fine.
Matt and Sam came smoothly to their feet.
Stay here, everyone. We'll see what's going on.
The two young men reached the saloon's entrance and stepped out onto the boardwalk. They peered down the street toward the Colorado Palace, which seemed to be the center of the commotion. Most of the people hurrying along the street were headed in that direction.
What the hell is that?
It is. Terry Kelly is driving the buckboard. And those men with her, Porter Wood and his gunslingers, along with those two old Texans.
I'm going down there. I want to see this for myself.
I'll go with you.